Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hour number four, Darren Donican Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. We've had a great show so far. If you missed any of our interviews, you can check it out at thegamenashville.com or search Darren Donican Chase in your on-demand store, wherever podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts from. Chase McCabe, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick. Hanging out with you.
What happened? Did Darren go research some of the kickers and stuff? Was he like buried his head in media guides or something to try to find the German kicker? Where'd you go, Darren?
No, I was actually kicking. I was practicing.
Oh, you were practicing kicking. Okay, you want in on the competition.
That'd be a hell of a story. D-Mac, I've seen you kick before.
Willie has too.
Yeah, that's a part of the history of 102.5 The Game.
That's right.
Ola Kimren.
I nailed it, by the way.
Was the guy we were looking for.
That sounds right.
Yep. I knew he wore number 3.
Was
that's
that
05? Why I remembered him. Yes.
Yep.
It was 05.
But I do think it's worth telling the story from the early days of the game where famously a guy that ended up being a heck of a kicker for James Franklin and Vanderbilt. I mean, he was I would say he's the best kicker that I have seen in the program since I've been watching Vanderbilt football, Kerry Spear. But at the time, he was a little bit unproven. They had a chance to beat Arkansas. They were in position to win. Kerry Spear missed a 28-yard field goal in a game that they eventually dropped. This was James Franklin's first year. They ended up getting to a bowl game, and we know what James Franklin did from there. But Kerry Spear was a big part of it. Not only a great kicker, but he covered kicks. He made tackles on the kickoffs. He was an excellent player. But before he really hit his stride, he missed that field goal, and Darren goes crazy on the air saying, I could make a 28-yarder. I could make one. And so we actually went to the field. We went to Una, right? What was the field?
Yeah, no, that's right.
Like the Una Bears, where they play?
Yeah, huh?
Middle school, not far from where our station is located. And Brad Hopkins is with us. And I had the torn ACL at the time. I was on the men, so I could
that's
not.
That's correct.
I think I kicked an extra point just to do it, but I was worried about the right knee. You know, I'm a left-footed, so that was my...
So that was your plant leg.
The plant leg, yeah. I didn't have the full strength in the plant leg, so I was more of a witness. And, Darren, I got to be honest, you made a 28-yarder eventually, which is the one that was captured on film. But there was a couple ugly ones leading up to that, you would have to admit.
Well, let's set the scene. I did not stretch. I did not practice. I just went out there and I said I get 3 cracks at it to make a 28-yarder. I didn't stretch. I didn't practice. I think Dubin was the long snapper.
Joe Dubin was the long snapper. I think I was the holder, wasn't I?
I would say you. I think you held.
Yeah.
And Chase may have been retrieving.
I wasn't there.
You were not there.
I think this was pre-Chase. This was before Chase joined.
I was an intern, but I was doing well.
You were out there. Okay,
I might have been. No, I would remember. That.
Jeremy Benefield was out there.
Yeah, Jeremy.
That's right.
Because
that's right.
At one point, I think he went shirtless. I think he in celebration took the shirt off and
he
started
did.
Running around.
Running around. Yeah.
And that is now that was some interesting footage.
Now I missed the first two, and I said I've got 3 cracks at it to make it. And the third one was my last one, and I nailed it.
nailed it. Yes. I nailed it in that it went through the uprights, yes.
Yes, it counted. It was
good. It counted. Would it have gotten over a charge from a defensive lineman? Did it have enough tilt to get up there? I don't know.
We'll never know.
We'll never know. It got over Joe, the long snapper. It did elevate over his head and did get through the uprights. It was not the highest kick I've ever seen.
Now, I did... Fox 17 a few years ago did a similar thing with Eric Alvarez where we all ran drills, and Joe was a long snapper because Joe actually was a long snapper, and I tried to kick, and I hit Joe in the head. So I was asked not to do that again.
Why are we not surprised to hear this?
We're not surprised.
No, I mean, you shouldn't be. If you are, then you obviously don't know.
The whole rant was, you have one job to do. Like, you're on scholarship to kick field goals. And it is interesting, Willie, like what you said, that he actually turned into a heck of a kicker.
A great kicker. A great kicker.
Was he a freshman then? That's what made me think that he was really young. Was he a freshman maybe?
I think he was a sophomore because he kicked that year and then the 2 years after that with James Franklin. And I think he graduated after that. So, but he had just won the job. He was an unknown at the time. And, of course, we had seen a long line of kickers not do so well for Vanderbilt, some better than others. But, you know, the margin for error for Vanderbilt football, we know you got to make big kicks, right? You have to have a good kicker because you're just not going to blow out a whole lot of teams most years. So if you're going to win, you got to have every opportunity to score come through. So it's not an easy job to have, the Vanderbilt kicker.
Was that game against Arkansas the one where I can't remember his first name. Kraus, who's the returner, got blown up, and it was a blatant. He had called for the fair catch and just got blown up, and I think he might have been lost for the year on that play. But I think didn't that put Vanderbilt, if I'm thinking of the right game, didn't that put Vanderbilt in position to either tie it or try and win it? But am I thinking of the right game?
What would have been
I think a guy got thrown out for taunting in that game. Not only did they blow up the player, I can't remember if it was Kraus or not. Jonathan Kraus was the guy
Jonathan
that played
Kraus.
In the NFL. Was that him that got hit in that game?
Yeah,
wow.
Because I remember he got
good
hurt.
Memory.
Wasn't it the 2012 season? Isn't that what we're talking about?
I think it was 2011.
Was it 2011?
I think so.
Okay.
Well, that would have been Franklin's
first year.
First year, yeah.
Okay. Okay,
that
so
sounds
it's the 2011
right.
season.
Yeah, because that was the first year of the game, 2011.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. I didn't remember it
I thought that they had the lead in that game. If memory serves, they had a decent handle on the game, and it slipped away late. It was an opportunity to win that slipped away in the James Franklin era. But they ended up going 6-6. They made the bowl game. They lost in the Liberty Bowl that year, and then had the back-to-back 9-4s the next few years.
Well, we know his worst season was 6-6. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
To say out loud, his worst season at Vanderbilt was 6-6.
Well, and also remember the expectations when he took over. Nobody thought they were going anything close to 6-6. And so he did a heck of a job that first year.
No doubt. So maybe there is a kicking battle going on over at Titans training camp.
And it's not Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe.
Nope.
Nor is it me.
That's probably a good thing.
Although I did kick. I did kick up through my football career retirement after the ninth grade. I was the kicker in all the football teams I was on.
Really?
Yes. I used to kick. I was never much of a soccer player, but I loved, as a kid, just taking by myself, I would take the Boomer football tee, right? The orange, who doesn't have one of those, right? The Boomer orange rubber tee, putting the ball on there and just going out to a field and just starting to kick all by myself. Kick it, go get it, come back, kick it again. I spent hours doing that. In fact, when I was 12 years old in the Citrus Bowl in Orlando, back then it was called the Tangerine Bowl, I had a chance to win a kicking contest and go to the Super Bowl. This was the Raiders-Redskins Super Bowl. Marcus Allen. Remember the Marcus Allen run? He goes one way, turns back, goes the other, and goes like 70 yards for the touchdown. He was the MVP. The Raiders blew out the Redskins. This was in the Big Sombrero in Tampa. So 2 hours over in Orlando, they have a kicking contest for all ages, and the winner gets to go to the Super Bowl in the Big Sombrero. Young Donick, age 12, wins the age category, the 12 and under. So I'm the youngest. So I go up against the other people in their age categories at the distance that you made your field goal. So my winning field goal is 28 yards, right? Or maybe it's like 26, 27, somewhere in there. Very makeable for me at the time. And I've got a chance, and I got to go up against the 18 and over, or, you know, the 15 to 18, and all the way up to like 50 and older. So there's like a 50-year-old guy, kicking in this. and I choked.
Oh,
I missed.
No.
I hooked
oh,
it.
No.
I hooked it. So I was out. Every single person missed when the pressure was on, including myself, except for one guy. And he made it from like 50 yards out. And he gets to go to the Super Bowl. So it was a tough moment.
Wow.
Tough moment. I think as a consolation prize, I got like some Chuck E. Cheese gift cards or something.
Yeah.
Could have gone to the Super Bowl. Mm. Settled for Chuck E. Cheese.
What, I mean, nothing against Chuck E. Cheese, but Super Bowl tickets are Chuck E. Cheese.
I know. It was a big drop off. I was like, you could at least give me like, you know, something, like a jersey or something. Hook me up.
Depends on if I let you have unlimited game time, you know?
All right.
If you're able to play games for unlimited,
something.
That would have been a little bit better.
You guys are not going to believe what I just found.
What did you just find?
I have
the video of Darren's
field goal. Yes.
Oh, yes.
Really?
It's on our Facebook page from way back when.
Really?
Yes. I'm going to see if I can share this to the page now. But I thought that it was somewhere, and so while we were talking, I found it. This is fantastic. This what a moment in history. To celebrate our birthday, we have this. There was a flyover.
Well, we were by the airport, so.
Yeah.
All right.
Most of the video is the flyover.
That was the best part of it. All right, we'll come back. We will hear from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel after today's practice. We'll do that on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Oh, my gosh. I'm not sure if I'm happy that you found that, Chase, or are you not happy? By the way, I've shed some pounds since
you have.
2011.
I think I have, too. But...
Which is good, right? You're not supposed to go the other way. 9 years later, you're supposed to do that. So that was funny. B-Hop was in there, too. I forgot he was narrating everything. He was doing the play-by-play. That was funny. I've tweeted it out,
and I think the link is working. Like, it's kind of working. Yeah. Okay.
I just watched what you sent. So.
Yeah. Well, I just tweeted that link out, so you can go and enjoy that. A long time ago. But, oh, man. What a classic.
That was outstanding. We had Dennis Kelly last hour, and right now we're going to head back over to the Titans facility, get a little bit more training camp feel. And, of course, all of our coverage from Titans training camp brought to you by OsteoStrong Nashville and Wyatt Johnson Ford. Here's Titans head coach Mike Vrabel.
Hey, Mike, Craig Joseph was on this roster for five games at the end of last season, made one field goal. At this point, how closely is this competition with Tucker McCann going? When a couple of kicks are missed, do you wait to see how the kicker comes back the next day? Or is this maybe a kicking competition that's tightening?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a competition. I mean, that's the idea. You know, it's hard to do that at every position. But there's some positions that we, you know, always feel like, you know, have to have some competition there. It makes everybody better. It's what we believe in. And, you know, I think that those guys have done a good job. Greg made all, you know, those extra points, you know, are practically field goals now. And, you know, so he was kicking. He kicked good for us last year when he came in. So obviously those pressure kicks that we had, some of those today. You know, we got to continue to work on them and make them, and as they get longer.
Coach, I had a request if you could tilt the camera just a little bit to center you up a little bit. Eric, do you have a question?
Yeah, hey, Mike. I was actually going to ask about the kickers, but instead,
Robbie?
Our digital folks, because we're streaming it live.
Just tell me, just say Ashley did it, and I'll gladly move it to wherever Ashley wants it.
Good. Eric?
Wanted to ask you about one of the undrafted rookies. I'm curious about your impressions of Mason Kinsey and just how he's adjusted from going from Division III to an NFL training camp.
Well, you know, those guys did a great job. They came into camp ready to go. As far as alignments, normally the first couple of days you're worried about, you know, these guys coming out of the huddle wrong, lining up, running the wrong route. So I think that we're, as this install continues to pile up and now adding 2 minute, you know, it's important that these guys are able to focus and concentrate, you know, when they get tired, and we're not huddling and they don't have the same amount of time to understand their job and the details that go along with it. So, you know, Mason has you know, shown to be tough and dependable out there and continue to work.
Teron?
Yeah, Coach, with Tannehill, this being his second year with you, how have you seen his leadership kind of evolve now that he's settled in?
Well, that was something that we had talked about last year, you know, when given the opportunity to be the starter. You know, Ryan worked his way in there and played well. And then as that comfort level began to grow, he really expanded his leadership and then took off in the offseason. And, you know, I'd say it's better now than what it was last year and working with those guys and having a relationship with them and, you know, understanding that each receiver is going to run the same route a little differently and where they're going to be to be able to complete passes.
Joe?
Mike, just wondering what you're seeing from Ferkser this year. Are you seeing progress, improvement from last year to this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ferk works hard. He's been a matchup guy for us, been key on third down, made some big catches for us. And I think that ability has shown thus far in camp. He's really tried to work against our safeties and those players and the one-on-ones, and he's caught some passes in the team period. So, you know, again, he'll continue to carve out a role, hopefully on special teams and having a role on our offense.
Corey?
Hey, Coach. Just want to ask you about Khalif Raymond and the development of his game. We all know he can go get it. What else is he showing you he can do?
Well, again, I think he's worked on his route craft. You know, the thing with Khalif is he's not the biggest guy. And so, you know, with that, sometimes they're going to try to create contact and try to knock him off his stride or press him. So I think he's worked hard at his releases. I think he's worked hard at running intermediate routes and having some really good route craft. And, you know, as always, any receiver, you know, can always improve his ability to catch the football and in traffic.
Jim?
Like, I know we're still a little ways off and some players that are practicing now won't be with you when the season opener starts. But what's the process like when, as far as turning your attention to Broncos and maybe do some early prep for them? Coaches doing it or what's that process like?
We're trying to improve the Titans right now. You know, that's really where we're at. You know, I would only imagine that the Broncos game plan would pick up where last year's ended. And then probably, again, you know, Vic's a fantastic coach, fantastic defensive coach. They got great players, great staff. And, you know, we hadn't scored a point on them in four quarters. So my guess, best guess is that plan would pick up until we were able to actually score. So, you know, we got a lot of improving to do here.
Paul?
Hey, Mike. Wondering about Ryan's command of the offense, of the huddle, of everything. What level of command do you feel like he has of the whole deal, and how much does the whole offense and maybe the whole team feed off of that?
You know, we're trying to, you know, create complementary plays. We're trying to get into the best play but not get, you know, too gimmicky as far as, like, hey, having a play call but not liking the look. And so I think he's improving on that. I think him and Arthur, you know, their relationship is continuing to grow. But, you know, as far as the base of what we're asking him to do, I think he's got a great grasp, and I think guys feed off of that, the operation, the cadence, the change in plays at the line of scrimmage, all those types of things are great. And then we're going to continue to expand to try to give us the best chance that we can based on what looks we're getting.
Does separately, I was wondering, I know this is weird. We saw Nate empty his stomach out there. I'm wondering if in COVID times, there's any protocol for such a thing. If you thought about moving away from that, if you saw it, if it's different now than it usually would be.
Well, I don't think that anybody would go, and I certainly am not going to get closer than 6 feet to someone's vomit. I think everybody will get everybody gloved up and try to hose it off wherever it is.
Thank you.
John?
Hey, Mike. I wonder if you could talk about Jeff Swaim a little bit, maybe what you guys are looking for from him and what kind of differentiates his skill set from maybe some of your other tight ends.
Well, Jeff's played in this league. He's got experience. Had a really good workout when we worked him out. Felt like it was a guy that we wanted to work with. I think he's improved. I think he's learning our system. I think he plays with effort. And again, I think he's got to continue to find a role on special teams like most everybody else does. Because when you get kind of in some of those backup roles or niche-type roles, he's shown that he can play on the line of scrimmage and kind of, also be a move tight end. But continuing to find a role for him on special teams and giving himself a chance to ultimately make the roster like everybody else.
Terry,
can I get a follow-up there? Not on Swaim, but wondering if there's a good rate that you guys shoot for in completing what you would call deep passes. Is there a 1-for-4 good, 1-for-5, in that kind of situation?
I mean, I think they call them 50-50 balls for a reason, but, ideally that's probably not realistic. It's something that we have to continue to work on, continue to defend, having the ability to, whether it's a fast guy and he's running away from somebody or it's a bigger guy that we're going to have to, throw open or stack them. There's a lot of different techniques that go into those. They change momentum of the game. They change field position. But as far as having, a determining percentage that's going to, try to figure out if we're winning or losing, I don't think that there's a number. More the better, right?
Terry?
Mike, in terms of the defensive play calls and all, you'll obviously be on the field. Do you anticipate Shane maybe being up in the box to give you both vantage points for when you get ready to make the calls?
Yeah, Shane will be the same place he was last year.
David?
Mike, I'm curious, do you ever, how much, I guess, if at all, do you plan your practice or meeting mood? Like, do you ever decide, I'm going to be particularly sour today and really put the heat on these guys?
No, I try not to be fake, David. I try to be as real and as honest as I can and try to point out the stuff that we're doing well that we have to continue to do. Try to point out the things that when players carry over individual drills and group drills to team settings, also try to point out when they had an opportunity to do that. Try to coach the situations, 2-minute, things that come up third down, red zone. Try to point to short yardage or missed tackles or ball taking care of the football. So I think that my mood is basically, just trying to be as honest as I possibly can. And I'm going from there.
Chris Harris.
Hey, Mike, regarding Ryan so far in camp, how would you rate his accuracy?
I think that everybody's skill set can always be better and can always continue to improve. But I think that, there's some throws that he'd like to have back. There's some that I felt like were out in front of guys that we should have had that maybe we dropped. And, it's about timing. It is certainly about accuracy and making sure that guys are in the right place at the right time and being decisive as well. Sometimes you get those zone coverage looks and you need to be decisive.
Corey?
Coach, whether it's week one, what do you look for in the practice ready? You can't hear me?
Yeah.
I was asking, what do you need to see on the practice field week to week or season to season that tells you you're ready?
operation, the clean, you know, I mean, making sure the guys aren't, you know, uncovered on defense, that you're sound, that you're playing with great effort. Conditioning, I think, is probably the biggest thing, you know, how our conditioning looks, that we can sustain throughout practice, that we're not repeating the same mistakes or having the same issues show up day to day.
Last one, Paul.
Wanted to circle back on the command idea. What? How about Ryan's level of mastery of this whole thing at this stage?
I'd say it's very proficient in what we're asking him to do, and the understanding of the offense. For example, the situation that came up today, you know, it was the first situation that we've had. I purposely, you know, we didn't show him what the defense was going to do or would do in that situation as far as at the end of the game, you know, and that'll be a great thing for us to learn from. We'll be able to show him the same exact play on film from a few years ago against an opponent that we had. But again, I think for the first and second and the third down proficient, you know, mastery, like you call it, of the offense, I think it's very proficient. You know, I'm very happy with his grasp of what we're trying to get done.
Example you're talking about is when the clock ran out in the 2 minute?
Correct.
Thank you.
Coach, I lied. One more, Jim, and that'll be our last one.
Like, I imagine it's different for everybody.
I didn't really count Paul's question as the last one, so this would probably be the last one.
Appreciate it, Mike.
You're welcome.
I imagine it's different for everybody, but what does an off day look like around the facility? For practice, that is, when you're not practicing tomorrow.
We'll get them some recovery. You know, they'll eat, they'll go in and see Chris and Marilyn and, you know, Irene, Anwar, they'll get some breakfast. We'll meet. We'll have squad meeting, special teams meeting, O&D meeting. There'll be lunch, you know, so really focused on just trying to get their legs back, their bodies back, treatment, and try to get some of these just details cleaned up. Continue to hammer home these details of whether it be the situations that happened today in practice or, you know, some of the new plays that we may be installing.
There you go, Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. After today's practice, we spoke with Dennis Kelly after today's practice, and then you just heard some insights from the head coach. What stood out to you guys? Anything?
I don't think we got a lot of big news out of that.
Davis threw up.
Yeah, that was big.
Yeah,
that was a great waste of 60 seconds of of radio there. Nobody, I don't think anybody wanted to hear that. But
stay 6 feet away from it.
Yeah. Like, how do you answer that question? I mean, give me a break. But I think I sense an overall comfort that Mike Vrabel has with most of his personnel. I think back to the last 2 years, his first year in particular, a little less so last year, but even last year, you had Taylor Lewan suspended for 4 games. You had Roger Saffold coming in, trying to get acclimated, struggling. Nate Davis, AWOL, nobody could find him. Where was he? They had issues in training camp. The year before, Rashawn Evans, it took a long time before you really got him on the field. You had all kinds of wide receiver problems. You had your whole thing with Marcus Mariota both years. Is he the man? Is he not the man? Last year, he had a brand new offensive coordinator. I sense a much higher level of comfort and certainty and continuity, especially offensively. Maybe, I guess, this year a little less so defensively because you've got a little more questions there. You've got a new system, et cetera. But I think they're so far ahead at a starting point from where they were the last 2 years. I think that is going to pay a lot of dividends early for a team that has basically been a slow starting team, right, under Mike Vrabel. That's my thought.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thought because that – I think that's going to be, you know, we've seen for the past several years of, okay, they finish strong, but what happens if they start strong and finish strong? What does that look like? Does that mean that they get past Kansas City in the AFC Championship game? I don't know. I don't last year, probably not, but it certainly could make a difference in where they're seated and winning divisions. And we've said it on this show that I believe it's time for us to be having the conversation about the Titans winning the division. Now, obviously you got to do do more than just that. But it's time. And historically with this franchise, they haven't won the division a lot. And I think that needs to change. We saw it with the Predators because that was obviously a big part of the conversation of, okay, when are they going to win the Central Division? So they've done that. You want to see more beyond that. But I believe that the pieces are there for a faster start for this team, starting with Denver on a Monday night.
Isn't that amazing? The teams have had – it's not like, you know, they've been the Bills. You know, the Bills went – basically two decades without getting to a playoff game after the Music City Miracle, or, you know, some other franchises that they just never make the playoffs. There's been successful teams here making the playoffs, whether in hockey and in football on the pro side, and yet very few division titles. It is strange, right, for 20-plus years in a market. What the Predators
Do you know how
have,
many?
The Predators have back-to-back, so that's two.
Yep.
And the Titans have – they didn't win it. That's the thing. People think, you know, 99, they won the division. They did not. They were 13-3 and did not win the division. They won the division in 2000.
Correct.
They won the division in 2008.
2002.
Yes.
2002, 2008, 13-3 season, because that was the best record in football.
That's it.
I think that's it. Yeah, that's it. Three. So five total division titles between the two franchises. That's amazing.
Just for reference, the franchise as a whole, going back to Houston when they were formed in 1960, they have won nine division titles, and four of those were before the merger. So four of those came in the AFL. Once the AFC Central was formed, you mentioned 2000, they won it in 91 and 93, and that's it.
So two before coming here.
Yes.
And then three since they've been here. Wow. Of course, the Steelers had something to do with
sure,
that.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, that was such a tough
division. And then the Ravens had something to do with that.
Yeah, and then once the South happened, the still kind of new AFC South, the Colts, you had to deal with. So they've certainly had that. But, I mean, we've all said it. It's time to talk about that. They need to win the division. Now, you want to see them win the conference. You want to see them win the Super Bowl. But division titles are definitely important. And so I believe, and I know that that's the goal because they've talked about it. Vrabel has brought that up, competing for the AFC South title, and many people have picked them to win the division this year.
We shall see. All right, we'll come back and wrap up Tuesday's edition of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend. The end of our elaborate.
We're close to the end here on this Tuesday. Nashville SC is back in action tomorrow. They're going to take on Orlando City SC. That'll begin at 6:30. The game will be broadcasted on 94.9, and the pregame's coverage will start at 6:15. So Nashville SC back on the pitch tomorrow against Orlando City. Had a lot to get to today, I'll tell you what. We've covered a lot of ground. Yeah, we have covered a lot of ground. We have Peter Burns from SEC Network on in the first hour. Good discussion with him as we sit here, and today, I think it's safe to say you feel a lot better. And by the way, Jeff Fisher even brought it up. We've said it on this show. I mean, Austin Peay's got a game this Saturday.
Yeah.
There's going to be college football games, and MTSU is going to start at Army. You heard that promo. And right now, it seems like for sure SEC, ACC, Big 12 are going to give this a go, and we'll see. By the way, UT has officially come out and said they're going to operate at a 25% capacity. So I guess they're going to let 25,000 fans in for their home games this year. But it is subject to change. They did leave an opening, which is smart to say, you know, we can also change our mind. I don't know. You could change it as in we'll trim that down, or I don't know. Who knows? If it goes well, they may try to extend it. I don't know. Then we had Alan Bell on with us. We talked some NFL with him. There's been good news on the NFL front with their testing. So far, so good. We read the NHL yesterday. They continue to produce zero positive tests in their bubbles in Edmonton and Toronto. Then we had Jeff Fisher at noon. We had a good conversation with him. And then Dennis Kelly, you heard right after that, coming off the practice field. And then you just heard from Mike Vrabel after practice talking about some of the things that took place. I don't know about you guys, but high school football, we talked about it yesterday on the show, took place on Friday once again earlier. Hopefully they're not going to cancel the Metro season, the season for the schools in Metro, Davidson County. I hope not. But I feel better that the SEC is going to, and the ACC and the Big 12, I kind of feel like today's vibe or this week's vibe is they may be able to pull this off after all. I feel better than I did a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
It does seem like the outlook is better. We're getting some good news. It's treacherous, right? Every day, you know, like, you know, the impassioned speech by Nick Saban that we played earlier. There have been a lot of coronavirus cases on the campus at Alabama. I think that's the biggest problem. The biggest challenge is for the colleges on the campuses. Sure. If you read across the country, it is complicated. It is hard. You know, and campuses, that what do you do, right? Nicole Auerbach, who I think we all follow on Twitter, excellent journalist, she shared on her Twitter an email that a student at William & Mary got. And it was basically, read them the Riot Act and scare the heck out of them and saying, it's up to you for our entire existence as a university to survive, right? Basically, you can't get sick. Don't be that guy that gets sick and forces us to shut down or forces one of our staff members to get sick. All of these things, putting it on the shoulders of a college-age student. And she was kind of like saying, that's not the right approach. But what do you do? You can't say nothing, right? How would you go about it to try to execute a college semester on campus? There's no easy answer to that, and that just complicates the whole football thing.
Yeah, and I think they're trying to navigate through that, and to me, the only way that you really can start to answer that question is a little bit of trial and error and trying to figure some of it out and get, you know, letting the students have a choice. I know a lot of places that have opened their campuses, they've kind of left it up to the student that, all right, if you don't feel comfortable, then you can just be virtual only, or you can come to class. And it's just figuring some of that out. I have a friend that's in grad school at Georgia, and they've basically split his class up to make it where you can come to class, but it's a safe atmosphere. And so they're trying that. But I'll ask this, though, to answer your original question, Darren, yes, I feel better. I feel better about it right now. How much do they have to complete all of the season for us to completely blast the Big Ten and the Pac-12 for their decision? Or how much of the season do you think has to be completed for the Big Ten and the Pac-12 to feel absolutely silly and people basically say, you guys jumped the gun, you didn't put a lot of time and thought into this, and therefore you deserve what comes your way?
It's premature to say anything today because we don't know how this is going to play out, but I'll say and echo the same thing I said back at the beginning of this when I said this is way too early for them to shut everything down. They're going to get crushed if the other schools pull this off. By the way, it's not just the Power Five. I mean, the Power Three, or the three conferences in the Power Five that are playing. There are plenty of other schools that are playing college football this season. They have a schedule, and they're going to attempt it as well. If they pull it off and they do this, I mean, they're just going to get – it's going to be devastating for them. And I hate that for them because we've already saw Iowa's already just canceled six programs. Mm-hmm. And it's going to get really bad. Stanford has canceled a lot of programs. And it's going to get way worse than that. Yeah, and just, by the way, PR-wise, they will just – it will be a very, very rocky start for Kevin Warren as the brand-new Big Ten commissioner after Jim Delaney has been on that post for three decades. He, I mean, you can imagine what will be directed his way. But, you know, it's obviously way premature to have that any of that right now because nobody knows how this is going to play out. But, man, if they do, and there's college football this year, and these teams play, and the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are sitting there not doing anything, and, oh, by the way, we talked about it, in Columbus, they're playing high school football every Friday night in Columbus, Ohio. Boy, it's going to be a bad, bad look.
The only thing I would caution in saying, because I think that is certainly a possibility, but when you say if they pull it off, There's also a scenario where you pull it off, but there's a cost. You know, what is the cost associated with pulling it off? Do, say, hospital, you know, the number of people that get the cases, the number of people that get traced back, and hospital beds fill up, all of these things that go with more activity in any kind of circle, that's what we have to balance with it. And I, as I've been saying, oh, I'm trying to be consistent, I think it's worth the risk on some level, right? There's a point in time where it's not worth the risk, but I think it's worth the risk to try. The other part of Jay's question was, you know, how much of the season do you have to complete? Well, if you got eight games in, or six, or even six games in, and the alternative was no games, that's better than none.
Yeah.
But it's also, what was the cost of playing those six or eight games, right? Was there a huge price to pay that we'll look back and say, wait a minute, we tried.
What's the cost of not playing them, though?
There you go. This is the discussion, right?
By the way, we end up
doing this every day.
When were most of the positive tests that we've seen on the college football scene? When were most of them? When they were arriving, mm-hmm. right?
So
what does that mean? Where were they getting it? So, by the way, so does that mean that they don't have a season? Then they're going to be fine. Most of these guys were contracting this before they were coming, and then they showed up and they tested positive when they got tested, which means wherever they came from, that's when they were testing positive. That's where they were getting it from. So it doesn't. So what? Okay, so they were testing positive before they were playing football. Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you say to that?
Well, because they weren't.
That could be taking up hospital space too. I mean, a lot of these guys were contracting all this before they came to campus.
And I think we're seeing when they're in a controlled environment, and you can apply this to the.
That's what I'm getting.
NFL.
I think that's getting better when they're in the controlled environment. Things have calmed down. They all showed up in LSU, North Carolina, right? We all know the cases where there were. What do they have? Clemson had 30. LSU had, 30-something kids? Well, that's when they were showing up and getting tested. So they were doing this on their own. So that just because you don't play football doesn't mean you're not going to get it. We've already seen proof of that.
Very true.
Yeah. And it just – I go back to the and we can go round and round on this, but at what cost – if they do play, but what's the cost if they don't? Because all these programs that are getting canceled, I mean, I know some people may sit there, well, they'll be canceled for a couple of years and they'll reboot it. Don't you kind of look at it like when you turn the air conditioning off, that it costs you more to turn it completely off and then restart it to cool the room
right.
off?
Yeah.
I mean, it's almost like, I don't know. I don't know if that's really possible. Maybe in some cases, but I feel like some of these programs that are getting canceled, they may just be done.
Yep. Don't turn your unit. You know, if you go out of town, don't turn it off. Just push the temperature up. But you're right.
Sure.
If you just leave it off and you come back to a house that feels like the oven, you're going to make your unit work three times as hard just to cool everything down. So look at you, just throwing all kinds of examples out there. You're like a house owner, a homeowner. There, Chase.
I know. How about that?
Good analogy. Look at you.
Got some good games tonight, guys. Yeah. You got Luka against the Clippers again. Kawhi Leonard against Luka. That is a heck of a series. Best one going. That's game five tonight. Series tied 2-2. 8 o'clock on TNT. Boston-Tampa.
Yep.
Game Six two. O'clock. Let's see if the Lightning, the team we all picked, can even up the series against the Bruins. And then Vancouver gets another shot against Vegas. They got absolutely crushed in the first game. Can they bounce back?
That'll be about 8:45 tonight. That will do it for us. You have a great rest of your day. Be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning starting at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Moto Casino.